The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, its management, the UC Board of Regents, or adolescents ailing to get on with their lives and multitasking mamas everywhere. Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shamba, welcoming you to the March 16th, 2021 edition of Ask a Leader. Returning to the show is my guest, Ellen Mackey, senior ecologist with the Metropolitan Water District, with the developing story of the Met's executive's response to claims of unhealthy, expensive work culture conditions. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. And speaking of Women's History Month, making history and picking up where we left off with my February 23rd show on the Metropolitan Water District workplace culture with women and ratepayers paying some serious cash, my guest for the full hour is Ellen Mackey. Ellen is a senior ecologist with the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California and the Watershed Council, where she conducts field mapping native vegetation. Ellen's other role is leader of the Metropolitan Water District's Union of Women's Caucus. And we're going to resume what we talked about with the article penned by Adam Almaharik in the Los Angeles Times. Ellen comes from her home in San Fernando Valley. Welcome back to Ask Leader, Ellen Mackey.
Good morning, Claudia. Thanks for having me.
And we are recording this on March 12th. Things keep changing. There will be more news coming. So I want to start to set the listeners' minds to what happens in a workplace setting that can be so corrosive for certain individuals. And I'm going to read what Rebecca Traister mentioned about what women in the Andrew Cuomo administration, he's the governor of New York, and I quote her for this paragraph. Cuomo's treatment of some of the young women who worked for and around him demonstrated a kind of diminishment and tokenization that may take a sexualized form and may involve objectification and flirtation, but which didn't always entail explicitly sexualized contact or connection. In fact, Cuomo may be a textbook example of how sexual harassment, like sexual assault, isn't about sex at all. It's about power. In Cuomo's case, it was manifestation of his obsession with performing dominance, emphasizing the gulf of authority between the governor and those around him, making him feel big and conveying to others that they were small. So I don't know, Ellen, if there is a part of that that you want to respond to, or we will leave that for listeners to know and understand and appreciate that in the workplace, there's this sliding scale of how women can be offended where they should just be effective professionals.
I agree with that. So the scale goes all the way from sexualized behavior all the way through diminishment and being treated like secretaries or people who can go get the coffee. That's what Gina faced. I faced something very different in terms of being diminished by a very arrogant engineer who considered me a tall, blonde girl biologist and therefore someone not to listen to until I had to force him to. So there's a wide range of issues that women face or employees face, period, including safety issues if you speak up. So it's not just sexual harassment, although that's one that women face very frequently, in fact, too frequently.
Well, since you were on the February 23rd Ask a Leader, I'd like for you to talk about what have been sort of the latest encounters, let's say it may be virtually because of the pandemic conditions, latest encounters with the Metropolitan Water District managers since the coverage of your topic in the LA Times and elsewhere. And I'm thinking of Gloria Gray, who is the board director for the MWD. There's the general manager, Jeff Keitlinger, there's the ethics director, Mr. Salinas. So I don't know if there are any of those moving parts that you want to talk about that they now see things a little differently, a little more sharply, and a little more urgently.
Things are moving far too rapidly. It is difficult to keep up. It seems like it's moving sometimes on an hourly basis. So, so much is happening. It is exhausting. That's why Gina's not here today, unfortunately.
And we're speaking of Gina Chavez. Gina's function is water pump plant mechanic with the Metropolitan Water District. So when we speak of Gina, we speak of Gina Chavez.
So the retaliation has begun. I think we've detailed some of that. Board members removed from their position. Gina has a retaliation investigation that goes on. The other two people who came forward in the article are on unpaid administrative leave. Unpaid. I'm under increased scrutiny for my time. And most recently this week, a petition is now circulating, trying to neutralize the independent outside investigation by saying most people feel fine about what's going on at Metropolitan, specifically calling out me as someone who's creating a toxic and disruptive environment at Metropolitan. And executive management has supported that by putting that petition online so that people can access it. And now that's being described as First Amendment rights, even though that manager who generated the petition is using government resources, and she is not a spokesperson for any of the organizations within the district, nor is she with any of the bargaining units. But apparently she has First Amendment rights. So I'm going to cling to that during this interview as well.
In what capacity, though, did that manager speak if she doesn't have those other roles?
She is, I'm going to go right on a limb here again, as I am wont to do, and say she's a typical mean girl who is a sycophant and a cheerleader for Jeff Keitlinger and is upset that people are challenging the way things have been done at Metropolitan and is uncomfortable with change. But she is one of the problem managers, quite frankly. People are feeling coerced to sign in order to retain the ability to have a career progression because I believe their name is being put forward. So they will know who is signing, who is not signing, as opposed to the independent outside investigation, which retains confidentiality so people can feel that they are free to go forward and speak. So this is kind of the dark reverse of the independent outside investigation. Cynical.
So this petition garnering signatures, would that then be for the Shaw Law Group on retention by the Metropolitan Water District directors, that the Shaw Law Group would be getting more data to talk about the workplace setting? I mean, is this not sort of like an extension to the already 125 requests for interviews for the law group, or it could be even more, 150, 160, they were saying at a recent meeting before the board directors?
I would say the fact of the petition is something that they can use in their report. And the fact that the manager was allowed to post it and that the general manager seems to be supporting it through some excuse of transparency, but the content of the petition is disturbing because it talks about 10 different articles, one of them explicitly calling me out. And at the end of the survey, you have two choices. Yes, I agree with all the articles. Yes, I agree with some of the articles, and that's it. And then you sign it. So they will know who's signing it, who's not signing it. This is the opposite of what the Shaw Law Group is trying to get to. I mean, potentially this survey could get a lot of hits. It could, since we have about, I believe, 1800 employees, what if people decide to take the survey multiple times? What if they got 2,400 responses in the survey?
But it may not be a balancing though, but it may not be enough. Just signing a petition that has prepared remarks, it may not be enough to offset what, let's say, an entire interview would lay out in terms of data that addresses the workplace setting.
Oh, it shouldn't. This is
so. That may be that there is an asymmetry. There's a column of signatures to a statement versus narrative after narrative after narrative, Ellen.
Well, it's disparaging in its intent, and it's coercive to anyone who doesn't sign it.
And that will be, that inference will be probably pretty clear.
Yes.
For those of you who've just joined us, you're listening to Ask a Leader. My guest is Ellen Mackey, Metropolitan Water District Senior Ecologist. And she is also a union representative for women employees, not just the tradeswomen, right? The up to 80-some% of the women that are employed in the Metropolitan Water District. Here talking about the workplace culture that she's challenging. We're recording this on March 12th. So there is this piece then, the Shaw Law Group, that's taking interviews, and there isn't a specific deadline, but definitely the board directors for the Metropolitan Water District are inquiring. They want to know about the scope. They want to know about how far back this is going. And so you can talk to the state audit that goes back to around 2004. Admittedly, it's probably much, much, much earlier than that. But talk about, Ellen, that state audit at what it has said and how that is being brought before the Metropolitan Water District managers and directors to see this persistent culture.
So first, let me go back to the date that it's going to be finished. We, the Women's Caucus, three of the managers, and a number of our outside supporters pushed very hard on November 9th for this independent outside investigation, rather than the cynical internal investigation that was being put forward by legal that would have culled the three people from the desert who were coming forward and tried to say that that was atypical of the metropolitan experience and it was just them. So we had to bypass that to get the board to understand that we wanted a full investigation. And at the time, I believe Sylvia Ballen said, we want to be able to come back to this board as necessary to supplement the original amount of money for this investigation, because we wanted it to be free ranging, to look at all of the policies, all of the witnesses, to fully investigate the culture in Metropolitan. And I think last time I said, this is probably going to take a year. There's no way this could have been finished by the end of March. That's this month. There's no way it's going to be finished by the end of April. I doubt by the end of the summer it will be finished, because if 125 came forward by the 23rd and the date for the survey for the Shaw Group just ended yesterday, more people came forward, because I know I did.
Oh, they have been. Okay.
More people came forward. They're not going to be able to finish it. And you can come back multiple times if you feel like an hour is not sufficient. So they're getting so much data right now, as so many people are feeling more comfortable coming forward. This could continue, and you can email them at any time and ask for an interview. It didn't actually end yesterday. If you want an interview with the Shaw Group in 2 months, you can still contact them and say, I want to be interviewed. So this is something that's going to continue on as more and more people feel comfortable and safe, because right now there's a battle going on and people are standing on the sidelines and they know they're risking financial stability if they step in too quickly. So they want to know who's going to be on the quote unquote winning side. Are we actually looking at an opportunity to make real change, or is this going to die out? And if it dies out and everything sinks back to the way it was, then they should be silent and they should not come forward. We hope that this is an opportunity to improve conditions for all employees, that people feel more and more comfortable to come forward and say, here's my story. It's not as dramatic as Gina, Miranda's, or Lee's, or even Ellen's, but I did face abuse. I did go home many days in tears and have to put myself together to go back to work. Here's my story. And it's not as dramatic, but it is important to me and my family because it's affecting my life. So that's going to be continuing to happen as people see, we hope, that there will be an actual change. It's not just lip service, because there's a lot of lip service at Metropolitan. And as I've said many times, saying ain't doing. Sitting around having a coffee clutch with a DEI council is not making change. It's sitting around talking
and
about
it. And that's diversity, equity, and inclusiveness. Because it's coming right into the everyday verbiage. But, and the Shaw Law Group, just to clarify, it is a very independent, you are confident, it's an independent appointment.
I'm very confident it is under the ethics group, Abel Salinas. And I don't know if anybody's sensitive to this, but I remember hearing him 6 to 9 months ago give his reports. And I listened to him this week. And I have to say, I can hear a change in his voice.
Okay, that's very interesting.
He is assuming the authority and he is assuming the power that's associated with that. And I believe that we can trust him to move this forward in a way that's going to be equitable for employees. That the Shaw Group is really committed to a professional investigation and an interview, which is very sensitive, very supportive of people who might be nervous, although you can ask for your steward to be there as well. But I believe that this is something that for the first time, it could create real change.
Wow. And we've talked about the expense for a corrosive workplace. It certainly takes a hit on a worker's productivity, and there are settlements. So all of these things back up and create extra costs the ratepayers have to cover. So the ethics director, Mr. Salinas, is setting a new tone. There could be, for all concerned, very monumental benefits.
Yes, there are people who have had NDAs and they felt silenced. And a lot of them felt as soon as they signed their agreement, there was some buyer's regret there and they wish they hadn't because they wish they could speak out. And now it's very clear they can speak to the Shaw Group in spite of the NDA. If they feel that they want their story to be included in this investigation, they can do so. We would also like the board to consider neutralizing all of those NDAs. All of those NDAs should have gone through the board. I believe according to the 2004 audit, that's not happening. The board has not been informed. Chair Murray asked on Monday something really important. I was so impressed with his comments. Chairman Murray, who's chair of OP&T, he was alluding to the suicide that occurred 2 years ago. And they just heard about it in the LA Times because executive management and general counsel never informed the board of this. His question was, what else don't we know? Well, I'm going to say there's plenty you don't know, because too many of the board members so far have been saying, all of this is completely new to me. I had no idea all of this was going on, which means they've been not informed about what's been going on in the workplace.
So Ellen, to get back to your earlier point, your concern about that petition circulating that people are defending the status quo, I think the weight of all of these dire outcomes are much weightier, have more of a bearing than a listing of people to say status quo is cool with me.
Well, yeah, and especially since it's coercive. But the thing that's most disturbing is that it was justified by the GM.
But it corroborates this climate as being.
And here's the thing that I brought up, because I've already gone to the EEO office and filed on this complaint. The GM can say that this petition falls under First Amendment rights, even though it was done on government computer. But when Lee King used
one of the tradeswomen
who was brought forward in the first LA Times article, when Lee was celebrating their first Pride Month as a non-binary person and used a rainbow fist rather than the usual Metropolitan logo, which Lee always uses. But for June, they were using a rainbow fist to celebrate their first Pride Month. The hate speech that came back to them was unacceptable, startling, and sent out to the entire desert. And what happened was a manager called Lee and asked Lee, could you just take the logo off? And I was on the phone, so I heard it. I heard the conversation. He was attacking and re-victimizing Lee rather than the hate speech. And by the end of the day, Metropolitan had decided, oh, we have to have a policy on signature blocks rather than addressing the actual problem, which was the hate speech. Yeah. And the general manager seemed okay with that. So what happened to Lee's First Amendment right versus this survey, which is very cynical and attempts to neutralize the independent outside investigation, which is costing and will continue to cost Metropolitan as they investigate the culture there. Where's the difference there? I'm going to suggest it's hypocritical, which is not surprising. If this survey falls under First Amendment and can be said it's part of the transparency, then Lee should have been allowed to use the Rainbow Fest during their first Pride Month. And Lee's plan was to go back to using the Metropolitan logo. Actually, after 15 years of abuse and torture, that incident, it was the threshold for Lee saying, I need to take care of myself. And Lee took leave in order to start healing and establish an identity for themselves outside of Metropolitan. That incident, which seems so small, but it goes right to the same thing. If it's going to be a First Amendment right for this survey that's gone out, then Lee should have been able to use that fist. It should not have been made into a big deal, but it was a threshold incident for Lee, who is still on unpaid administrative leave because they are so pushed to the brink that they can't come back and face everyone in the desert because they were embarrassed and intimidated. And that was the whole point of that response, that hate speech. So it had a profound impact on Lee.
So I'd like to know, you said that in ethics director Salinas's case, there was a different tone, a major shift. Other changes, I mean, I have in front of me Chairwoman Gray's comments for organization, personnel, and the technology committee that she submitted also on Monday, March 8th. I could, if you want to comment on whether there is a good faith expressed in this or it's an irony.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack. I would say that finally, after all these years, Metropolitan is saying, we're shocked to find out there's racism and sexism going on in the workplace. Really? We've been reporting it for years. So that seems disingenuous. It is not a good faith effort, but I don't know that Gray completely knows that.
Not denial, just ignorance.
Or clueless. I'm going to take some heat for that one. Or just not knowing, utterly clueless, and believing what she's hearing from Keitlinger or general counsel or, you know, HR. But when I look at the letter and I'm looking at some of these bullet points, she talks about the independent review by the Shaw Law Group. And then the next point is that the employee-led, it is not employee-led. The DIE council is managers mostly from all of the employee resource groups, which is a small percentage of the workforce. And when I've seen them, there's almost a one-to-one ratio between executive management and the board and the actual employees. It's like, I don't think so. And they know not to speak up. So
on the council, on the diversity, equity, inclusion council.
This is an amalgamation of sycophants and cheerleaders. And then she talks about an experienced consulting firm has been brought on board to perform a thorough cultural assessment and provide a roadmap for improvement. That is the Shaw Law Group. And it's here like it's something different. It speaks to me of someone who's not quite aware of what's going on. It's a little worrisome.
So blurring the roles here and getting a hard look at the whole entire organization.
And it's wrought with half-truths and almosts, or we're not going to tell you the rest of the story, because the rest of the story would be damning. Yes, the entire board agreed to have an independent outside investigation consultant brought in. But after we had spoken for so many months and so many people came forward and were weeping, if you voted against it, you would be a jerk. They were manipulated into voting for it, but behind the scenes pretty quickly started working against it. As much as they might want to say that the Shaw Law Group was not pressured to end by the end of March, how would we even know that? When they came on, I'm thinking a year, and I was shocked to hear that it was going to be by the end of March. And I went, it's not possible to get any kind of grip on it by March or April or May or June, quite frankly. I don't see how they can do that.
Well, who's responsible for the actual clock? I know that the board directors had a question and answer session with the Shaw Law Group on the 23rd of February. So do you happen to know, Ellen Mackey, who determines when the Shaw Law Group is done reviewing?
I think the Shaw Law Group are professionals who know how to do this kind of investigation. I looked at their website and they've done a number of them and they're very efficient with their time. And judging from the interviews I've been with, they know what they're doing. But I think that there is so much to go through. They have the survey, they have all of the interviews, they're looking at all of the policies and procedures. They're supposed to be looking through ethics and EEO, all of the investigations, not to reinvestigate, but just to evaluate them. There is so much to do. I don't see how they can finish in anything less than the end of the summer, quite frankly. But I think the board is uncomfortable because if you constrain the amount of time that they can do the investigation, then you constrain the amount of information, which means have to face this.
Right.
We want it to be a thorough investigation. If you go back to and listen to our comments on November 9th, we want a thorough, in-depth investigation and allow the investigation to go wherever the information and the witnesses go. That's the only way to ensure that it's a thorough investigation. And then to come forward with, I know one of the things that of which I thought was very good that they're asking everyone is what suggestions do you have to improve Metropolitan?
Just let any listeners just join us. My guest is Ellen Mackey, Metropolitan Water District Senior Ecologist, one of many women that are challenging the workplace culture at the Metropolitan Water District. And she is in her capacity as the leader of the Union of Women's Caucus at the district there. So you're speaking of the general manager and the leadership parts of those are elements of what the Shaw Law Group can investigate. And in the February 23rd meeting, DEMWD Director Ballin asked whether the review will include the adequacy and the improvements of the board's oversight role, and will it address the confidence or lack thereof of the employees that limiting how much disclosure there's going to be in the appointment of the new general management recruitment process. So that appears to be, Ellen, one of the pieces. I mean, the general manager is the boss. Mm-hmm. It answers to the directors, but the general manager sets the workplace culture terms. That's the top of the organizational chart. So correct. What the Shaw Law Group's position here is that to investigate the extent to which the employees are confident that the general manager recruitment process will be transparent and therefore will meet the needs of the workplace. So in answering that element, how you want to see that that can be underscored, reinforced, how people in the interviews can address that, talk also about where the general manager, Jeff Keitlinger, is on this day of March 12th, 2021. His situation is rapidly changing as well.
Well, we're hoping that the general manager search is transparent and open and that we're not just presented with three options.
And when was general manager Keitlinger first appointed in that capacity? How long does he go back?
At probably 15 or 16 years. I was actually on assignment outside the district when he became general manager as a result of all of the threats of violence that I was getting inside the district.
So, and that's about the time that just after that state audit was issued.
Correct.
Okay. So he's overseen a lot. So where is he at this point? And talk about the general management recruitment process underway that you know of.
Oh my God, this is going to be very limited. I know I'm pretty
well, but that tells us something. Yeah,
it does. From what we know, there was going to be a jump to another job that seems to have fallen through.
Well, the understanding from the press is that he was under serious consideration for an appointment in a appointment in the Department of Interior. That's a federal appointment in the
correct.
Biden administration.
Correct. And that's
and where is the status of that review?
He hasn't said anything that I'm aware of, but as far as I know, that's dead. That ended. I can only state that I think it's good for the country, the West in general.
But do you think that the workplace features had a role in his not being considered further?
Yes.
So this is a a teachable moment for managers. You got to clean up house before you get yourself a promotion.
You can't, as you're leaving your job after 15 years, finally decide and pay attention to the fact that there's racism, sexism, retaliation, harassment, sexual harassment, and go, oh, I better do something or pretend to do something about this. Now, as you're leaving, it was calculated. It was cynical.
Do you think that the vice president, Kamala Harris, had been aware of this Metropolitan Water District entity while she was the attorney general and later the senator of California? But
oh, yeah.
When she's attorney general?
Yeah, you can't ignore Metropolitan.
So she was must have been an early contributor to a review of him.
I don't know anything about that. Again, I was outside the district for a very long period of time, but you can't ignore Metropolitan. But Jeff Kuntlinger is very good and very smooth at presenting himself professionally.
So the Los Angeles Times and the other coverage is a driver of changes of attitude. Has it affected board director Gloria Gray's tone or her approach? Deepening her curiosity about what's been going on since her appointment as director? And how long has she been on the Metropolitan Water District Board? And how long has she been chair?
I think it happened in late 2018 that she became the chair. That's when.
How long has she been on the board?
But I don't know how long she's been on the board. I mean, I'm a scientist. I haven't been paying attention to this. This has been my coming up to speed in the last year.
Well, and all in 1 year, that's a
all
lot.
All in the last 12 months. Yeah, it's been an amazing 12 months. It's a lot. It's a steep learning curve. I didn't know Gloria Gray before. I know there was a lot of excitement when she was first elected chair. It seemed like she was going to be very strong, very good. But it seemed like within 6 months to a year, she was leaning heavily on Jeff Kuntlinger, which meant all of the information was being filtered through him, which was not necessarily a good thing for her. And so we've been disappointed in her performance as chair. She has not reached out to us. She hasn't reached out to me or to the Women's Caucus at all, or to any of the women to find out. I know Lee King sent their 9-page letter to the board in early 2019, it was probably January 2019, because there's a 2018 date on it, which meant that it took a while for Lee to actually get all of that out. So it was sent to the board. And then after that, it's not clear what happened to the letter. It's not clear whether it went to Gloria Gray and she ignored it, whether it went to Gloria Gray and the rest of the board, whether it was filtered or allowed to languish in the board secretary's inbox, whether it went to executive management. And again, it was one of the things that the board didn't need to know, or whether it went straight to legal. We are hearing from legal now that they started investigating it, and we have no evidence that they ever started to investigate that 9-page letter. There's no evidence of it at all.
And that 9-page letter, though, is data that challenges the ethics and the legal obligations of the workplace under the California Equal Opportunity Employment.
Absolutely.
So it's not like the general counsel could not attend to that letter.
Sure they could. They didn't, because even though Lee sent it in January 2019, they're saying now, and what they told Adam Elmarek is that they started investigating.
And that's the LA Times writer. And thee and they is a pronoun that Lee, as a trans person, is using. So we're not confusing they, them, there with that of board members of the Metropolitan Water District. So it's sure. It does make for a little complicated following for listeners. But I wanted just to respect their choice of using they, there for reference to Lee, they, themselves.
Okay. So Lee sent the letter in January 2019. Gloria Gray said Tuesday, I believe, that she didn't see the letter until January 2020. I'm not sure where it was in the intervening year. We sent it in again in our comments when Lee spoke in July 2020. It's part of our attached comments. Mm-hmm. So the letter seems to have had quite a life of its own, and we don't quite know where it was for some of that time. We would like to know where it was. I think it will go directly to how legal and HR handle complaints. The whole reason that Lee King wrote it was because they, being Lee, was at the end of their rope and had gone through every process and procedure outlined internally in order to bring their complaints forward. They had been exhausted, and every one of them came back unfounded and unsubstantiated. But Lee was being tortured daily. So out of desperation, Lee poured all of this into a 9-page letter. It took a while, that went to the board secretary in January 2019. And now Gloria Gray is saying she didn't see it until January 2020. We don't know where it was in the intervening year.
So what is also a looming task and responsibility with the Metropolitan Water District, and Gina is sort of the embodiment of Gina Chavez, the tradeswoman employed by the MWD, she is on paid administrative leave indefinitely. Is there an end date to that?
No, it's indefinite until the investigation is over.
So the piece still looming over this review and the discourse between management and the directors of the Metropolitan Water District is the recruitment of women to work for Metropolitan Water District. The tradeswomen is the cohort that's probably the most, that has the very smallest margin. I mean, Gina is the last one, is the last tradeswoman employed at the MWD.
She's the first tradeswoman mechanic. I believe there have been others since then. I'm not sure.
But not very many, though.
No, not at all.
So that recruitment is a piece of the Shaw Law Group's investigation, is what is the MWD doing about bringing more women into this workplace, which is it's a great future. I'm sure the compensation packages are attractive. And we know from Gina's, the end of the interview that we did together on February 23rd, is that Gina, she's raising a daughter who wants to follow in her mother's footsteps. So what do you envision will be the concrete request of the Shaw Law Group to review, and what needs to happen in the recruitment process at MWD?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I sat through the interview with the Shaw Law Group and Gina, and one of the things that Gina and I went through in preparation for that interview is to ask her what she would suggest. And she has no shortage of suggestions. There was about 9 of them.
Wow.
Ways to improve the desert, ways to reach out to women, ways managers need to be made aware that having women in the workforce, they don't need to perceive it as an impediment to their usual humor. If their usual humor demeans women, they need to come up to speed and not see it as something compartmentalized and something they simply need to use at work versus something at home when they're with their daughters and their sisters and their moms. We need to have a workforce that just admits women and accepts them as an integral part of life. So she suggested more training for them, but we unfortunately have had managers in the past who simply went, yeah, I know I have to take this bias training. I have to take
checking.
Sexual harassment. And it's very dismissive. I'm not even sure they paid attention during any of it at all. So selection of managers is going to be critical, because right now, if you ask anyone, the manager pipeline, you have to be a sycophant, someone who's controllable above. And then for the people below, you have to be abusive. And, oh, you're perfect. And that's very dark. But that is what we see repeatedly.
Well, that's a tall order for the Shaw Law Group to take up. I mean, how many people total are employed throughout the entire Metropolitan Water District?
I keep hearing about 1,800 people.
Okay. So that's a battleship to turn around, to do a U-turn. In work culture.
It's extra. There are people, I will say this as a shout out. I have actually a good manager, and he's only the 3rd good manager I've had in my entire life.
And that's almost 30 years now.
At Metropolitan, yes.
Yes.
Yes. No, I mean, but he's the first in Metropolitan, though. The right. other managers would be outside of my life at Metropolitan, the only one at Metropolitan. I mean, a manager is someone who is supposed to get under their people, lift them up, get them what they need to do their job efficiently so that you look good, remove any roadblocks so they can get their job done, and you need to train them to take over your job so you can move up. That's a very different type of management style than we see at Metropolitan, which is push people down, yell at them, abuse them, send directions from the top down rather than getting under people and lifting them up.
So the tall order is a point well taken. So I'd like to check in. Now, Gina was unable to join us for this interview, Ellen Mackey. I'd just like to hear a few words about how's she doing?
Today, she's very stressed. The past year has been really hard on all of us, but she has four children and she is trying to balance being an activist, and any woman who's an activist knows this, with family life. And she knows she's on the phone a lot with me as we're trying to change things, but she also has children who need her as well. And today is one of those days where it all just piled up on her.
Okay. Okay.
And plus Lee King is also in the middle of an emotional crisis and reaches out to Gina as well for support. And so Gina has quite a few things going on today and we want to support each other.
And how are you doing?
Well, I don't have the same stressors that they have. I can do a lot of work here because my family is out of the home.
Yeah. So, and there have been a few recent meetings since we did the interview together and was broadcast on February 23rd, where you are a little at risk of some other shoes, not good shoes dropping. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
I'm under increased scrutiny. I know that. Definitely. But as a union steward and an officer, I have a lot more protection than other people may have. I have to be responsible with my time. I have to show that I'm producing at work as well as producing in terms of my union responsibilities. But I think it's pretty clear that we're making progress. So I'm not as concerned about myself as I am about Gina Lee and Miranda.
Okay. So we talked about more women were coming out as Adam El-Maharik's article came out in the Los Angeles Times last month. Are there more and more women always coming out to speak to you and in the Women's Caucus and then go and then they head over to the Shaw Law Group if they're ready to do that?
Yes, there are. There are people who are emailing me, who are mailing, snail mailing me, texting me. So I'm getting quite a number of people coming in. I'm passing on as much as I can to the Shaw Group if they feel comfortable to do that. I always have
What proportion pass. Would be interested that are in a position to speak to the Shaw Law Group?
Most are because I tell them I can be there if you want me to be there, but they are professional, they're compassionate, they will listen to you and they will not pass on the information. So I know that they're accepting my word that they can trust the Shaw Law Group. And okay. That's a big responsibility.
So I'm also curious, the Shaw Law Group, it's a review of the status quo and of future kinds of arrangements. How about what kind of, I mean, there are legal people that are working with you for these individuals' cases, but are there other legal beagles coming to you to offer pro bono services for these women?
Not yet.
None?
None have come forward yet.
No, public interest law schools, no big juicy law firms that have this pro bono obligation to,
not
to
yet.
Contribute.
Not okay. yet.
Why do you think?
I don't know whether this is part of the perceived power of Metropolitan and whether it's seen as something that could be crushing. I don't think it's any bigger than any other agency, certainly. So it's okay. A good question. I don't have a good answer other than that.
So Ellen, you raised in preparation for this interview, the retaliation that had been a concern in the past. Can you talk about what the Weingarten worker rights provisions are and where that was in relationship to your involvement at MWD.
Weingarten rights means that an employee at Metropolitan can request a steward to be present in an interview if they reasonably believe that they're going to be disciplined or if
she's with teachers.
This is a Supreme Court decision from 1975.
But it could have been that, Randy, though. I wouldn't be.
Yeah, okay. All I have is the 19. Okay. What it means is that people can ask for a steward if they reasonably believed that an interview is going to lead to discipline, termination, or impact their personal working conditions, which is pretty broad.
Yeah. So for any reason.
Well,
and you are the steward.
I am one of the stewards.
How many others are there?
Well, every officer is a steward. There used to be two stewards for each floor when we were at Cal Plaza, but we've gotten away from that. I would like to see more stewards because we can be definitely overworked. But stewards have responsibilities to represent impartially, and it becomes an issue at Metropolitan because if you're a steward and you speak up for people, you're then speaking up for people.
You become an advocate.
You become an advocate, and that means you have a black mark, especially if you want to represent them really well and push back hard enough because there's so much abuse, and I have a tendency to do that. I know I will never be promoted as a result of it. And so even stewards have a calculation they have to do at Metropolitan to like, well, if I speak up for this, what's the probability that something will happen in my future? Or how will this affect my career progression? And so it's problematic because a steward in their role as a steward is equivalent to the highest authority in the room, which means, and it has to be that way because if you're negotiating, you can't have this unequal power. So a steward can push back very hard on anyone and they will not be insubordinate.
And there are so many ways to do that and not be appear as an advocate, but it could be a fine line.
It's a fine line.
Especially if there is a manager that knows where that line is and trying to induce the steward to cross it.
Yep.
And that, okay. All right. Well, that's an interesting organizational feature. And for those of us who haven't been involved in those particular workings there. So
you have an example of when this happened over 25 years ago when they were trying to terminate me and they wanted me to be insubordinate. I was actually ambushed in a meeting with an assistant division chief who asked me into his office with two other managers at 4 o'clock on a Friday. And this is well after 4 o'clock on a Friday since we started it after 4 o'clock. But there is no steward around 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. So I had to go into that meeting without a steward. And I would strongly encourage anyone at Metropolitan who's in AFSCME, if you're being called into a meeting and you have any inkling that this could lead to any discipline, please stop the meeting and ask for a steward. You have to know to ask it. So I was pulled into this meeting and I immediately knew I was in trouble. And the assistant division chief started asking me questions and I immediately invoked Weingarten and said, I want a union representative. And he said, no, you don't need one. And I said, okay. Yeah, I want a union rep. And he said, no, you don't need one. And he went to ask me a question and I had to keep getting around it and going, I understand the question, but I want a union rep. And I had to become a broken record in the face of this extraordinary stress where there were three managers and just me and keep invoking my Weingarten right. And they could walk away and say anything.
And the AFSCME is the American Federation of State and Municipal Employees.
State, county, and municipal employees.
Okay.
I kept invoking my Weingarten right. And finally he said, okay, I think we're done here. And I said, okay, I think we're done. And I left. Then I fortunately ran into another AFSCME person as I left because I was starting to break down and talked with her. And I told her what happened. And she said, oh my God, you weren't insubordinate, but they think you were. So Monday morning comes around and I'm called into my supervisor's office. She had a manila folder in front of her. And I'm pretty sure it was my termination papers at that point. But I had also gotten a hold of the executive president who went to this meeting and was literally standing right behind me. So there was my supervisor, myself, and one of the witnesses from the meeting on Friday. And my supervisor said, I understand you had a meeting on Friday. And I said, yes, we did. And here, let me tell you what happened. So I took over the meeting And I said, he said this, and I said that, and I asked for a representative. And I looked at the witness. I said, do you remember anything else? Was that everything? And she said, absolutely, that was it. And I turned to my supervisor and said, good, I wasn't insubordinate because I never refused to answer a question. And her face drained, but yes. There was nothing she could do. And that assistant division chief lost his job that day. His failure to fire me.
Yeah. Wow.
But because I knew my rights, and obviously because the executive president was standing right behind me, there was nothing they could do. We face extraordinary pressure. You have to have some real huevos in order to stand up to that pressure. And the people out in the desert who are facing extraordinary pressure in this incredibly isolated environment.
With not a single employee around.
With no one around.
Just a manager.
Exactly. Who's abusive or someone. I mean, it's actually mind-bending what they face.
So that's why we're checking in with how they're doing and asked earlier about the recruitment. So
I want to talk to, if I can, for a moment, because we know that there's a number of people who are very uncomfortable with what's going on. I want to tell them, I know that there's change coming and it's very uncomfortable when change starts happening, because you wonder if it's going to spill onto you. But just because you don't see or feel any of the injustices that are now coming to light doesn't mean someone else isn't feeling that. Doesn't mean it impacts the quality of their life, their work life, their families. We all live in bubbles. Some people have more layers in that bubble than others, but it's no excuse to allow injustice to continue to anyone just because they happen to look different than you or be different than you.
Well, and Ellen, I want to say there's a personal friend in a workplace setting where her own employee status was being undermined. And in the way she pushed back, and this was in tech, that's all I'm going to say about the workplace setting. And it was, there was a ripple effect to her pushing back, that it was a palpable positive dividend that the other women in the employ there at that tech company, that it was rather immediate, that benefit that they rendered from her pushing back. So that I would like to, in my capacity as a host, say, looking over different life experiences, that there is so much to be said for standing one's ground in the name of justice, that this friend of mine did not expect it to happen so quickly and to have it be so palpable to her. So there's so much to be said for that. And how do people get a hold of that steward? Is it easy for them to know who the steward is? You said it's any officer at MWD.
Any of the group officers and the executive office.
But they're burning out. There's so many and that are there. It's a busy season for them with the Shah Law Group taking comments.
And a lot of them have other responsibilities within Metropolitan. So they may not be physically able to represent you in that moment, but you can defer the meeting until a time when your steward can be there. And you can ask for any steward that you want.
So can they, in fact, those aggrieved employees say to the Shah Law Group, I'm ready at some point. I mean, they'd be going to the Shah Law Group meetings, correct? The stewards?
No.
They do not go.
Not necessarily. Only if they're requested. I mean, we will be there for them if they want to.
Okay. So that may not be necessary though, because it's an independent group that's inquiring. So that may. Okay. So, all right. Well, Ellen, I really appreciate all this time you're giving us to return. We know there's going to be some more news breaking, and it may have by the time this is broadcast. And I just want to thank you once again, Ellen Mackey, for being on Ask a Leader today.
I just wanted to talk about what ratepayers are ending up paying for within Metro.
Right, we talked a little bit about that. Did you want to break it down in some details?
A little more. So,
like how much the NDAs cost?
The NDAs are not being disclosed to the board. So right now we don't know how much those settlements have cost. We do know that a number of abusive managers, and it's got to be at least a half dozen, if not more, are getting individual management consulting to the tune of $150,000 a year. For bad managers, I'm not sure it's taking. There doesn't seem to be an improvement, but they're getting this counseling. And Amy Dorado spoke about that in November. One of her managers was getting all this counseling.
Rate so that's a line item for one employee, $150,000 budget item per person. So multiply that by
however
how many managers. That's a lot of money, Ellen.
And so all of this fumbling on the part of management is passed on. That I had a facilitation that was a facilitator that was hired to try to make me feel isolated and alone. And that facilitation took about a month. So they paid for a facilitator as part of some scenario to try to get me to quit. And ratepayers have to pay for that. How much of this is going on within the district? How much of this that people are paying for? They're also paying for expensive trips that board members go on every year. What we're trying to do is drag this kind of arthritic, very heavy agency from its mid-20th century attitudes towards women and infrastructure into the 21st century. It's an opportunity to re-envision how this agency functions. And we want a workplace where everyone is valued. That's what we're trying to do. So we bring in millions of acre feet of water per year through all of the concrete straws that we have emanating from Los Angeles. And the metropolitan ones are the California Aqueduct and the Colorado River Aqueduct. And we bring all of these millions of acre feet of water. We use that water once, we treat it, and we throw it away. And we throw it away into the ocean. Now we have groundwater basins that are overdrafted that we could be filling, and they should be brimming full of water, but they're not. So we should be taking that water rather than using once and throwing away and putting it in groundwater, which we can then keep reusing in kind of a closed loop. But we're throwing water away and then we're putting a desalination plant in to take that very water, pull it back in, take the salt out at an extraordinary energy cost and all of the waste associated with desal and the expense to take the water again, mix it with more imported water. It's like if you wanted to design a more inefficient system, you would be hard pressed.
And that is, I guess that's the drag on this ossified agency is that there is so much energy draining a verdant, intellectually honest, progressive, kind of technologically minded workforce, and it's solving the past problems and not looking toward future adjustments and in a corrosive work environment so that there's too much lost opportunity. And I'm going to continue to cover what kinds of water buffalo water projects we as a public, as ratepayers, are being committed to. I'm going to continue to talk about the Poseidon Project and the stormwater recharge opportunities and the closed loop solutions. I'm going to continue covering those because all of these are a Venn diagram that's very tightly closing into a circle. So Ellen, I want to thank you so much for bringing the management of the resource and management of the human resource together in the closing of this. And I look forward to bringing you back on with Gina. Maybe there's some new tradeswomen stories coming through and we'll talk about that on Ask a Leader. We could talk about it on Digging Out, okay?
Thank you, Claudia.
Okay, thank you. My guest today was Ellen Mackey, Metropolitan Water District Senior Ecologist, who leads the Union's Women's Caucus, talking about her challenging the workplace culture at the Metropolitan Water District. As this story continues, we'll have Ellen and tradeswomen come back to this program. I've even put in a special request for a young lady grooming to become one such tradeswoman to talk with us. I'm crossing my fingers. And for next week's show, we'll hear from California Redistricting Commissioners Linda Akutagawa of Huntington Beach and Trina Turner from Stockton. They'll talk about the newly appointed commissioners, how they're getting along and getting it all done, and how California constituents with an independent commission tasked with district mapping, Californians have one less thing to fret about. WeDrawTheLines.org if you want to do your homework before the program. Talk with you next week. Thank you for listening, everyone. Masks, still sporting yours, right?